This is really a conversation from a practitioner's point of view about the issues that we face within academic institutions. I believe quite firmly that websites are about content, and really our job is to get content and supply it to users, to customers, people using the websites. And I remember very clearly going into the pro director, as we call it, I think probably other institutions, pro vice chancellor, at the LSE, this is where I work. And he said, there's just not enough research information on the website. There's just not enough detail about the research we're doing in a research-led institution. We've got to sort it out. And I remember feeling so deflated after that meeting because I knew I was facing failure in this one. It's very, very difficult to acquire content within like an institution because other people own the content. And largely what I see my job about and the team's job about is getting that content out of the institution and bringing it to the surface and making it available for customers, users. I have to say we're slightly different from Warwick and many other institutions. We're very much a small institution, about 7,000 students at the LSE. We're quite centralised, although we do have departments that are very powerful. We don't have faculty. We don't have school level. So there aren't these power bases in between the central institution and the individual department. So I suspect, well, certainly given my experience at other institutions, there's a lot of collaboration, a lot of common ground and people working together. I'll try and make this work. A quick caveat here. I see one of the best sources for best practice for web professionals being the Office of Government Commerce. It's probably the nearest source in terms of sector and industry to HE and web that we have when you look at all the other sources of best practice which are largely commercially orientated. So when I use the word customer, I do put it in inverted commas in some ways. But just a caveat here that screens and slides and text that I've labelled blue has been taken from the Successful Delivery Toolkit. I had a chat with them. They asked me to put this up to make sure it was made obvious. Everything else is copyright LSE. Just a very quick overview. Customer focus, customer chains, partnerships, whose web is it anyway? Web services reference, about 29 slides altogether. I want you to just have a look at this text, which I've taken from the customer focus best practice guide that OGC provide. And just to reflect on it for a moment. Okay, to put you out of the misery, for those of you who don't want to read through that, I'm going to step through it bit by bit because it's important. Customer focus is the public sector. It's about refocusing services around the needs of the citizen as a consumer or customer of public services rather than the problems of those who provide the services. And really the key points are, who are our real customers? What do our customers need, want? What services should we deliver? And what resources, more importantly, do we have to make those services available? It's all very well starting with good ideas and setting up new services and content and websites, but then comes the pain of having to deliver those long-term when the customers are satisfied with them. It signifies an organisational culture that aims to address the needs, expectations and behaviours of the public that adjust every aspect of the organisation to align with customer values. So what changes need to be made in the team, in the organisation, to realise and deliver value to the customer being primarily the user of the website? And this includes the entire delivery chain, policy making, business processes, everything that goes to support that delivery of content to the customer. And the key issues here are monitoring, review, measurement, and feedback. Now, the customer focus best practice guide that's available on the OGC, I encourage you all to go away and have a look at this. I'm going to provide the references at the end. It's a very well written guide, very, very useful. And it provides very simple models like this, which, I mean, the term model here is like a model you would have in architecture or what have you. It's just a concept and idea just thrown up. And the term model is often used. I've used the word recently and people got confused. But nobody's saying it should follow this strictly, but it gives you a good way to conceptualize the work you're doing when you're dealing with users and people knocking your door and you've got the phone ringing and life's difficult as it is when you're dealing with web issues. But all those points that we've gone through now are presented quite succinctly in this model. You assess who the customers are, you identify their needs, you identify the services, and you look what you can do realistically with the resources you have available. You pull this together into identifying what changes you've got to make to the website, because it's still going to be there tomorrow. You're going to have to change it the day after and continue changing it henceforth. And then finally, we need to constantly review that, monitor it, check it, revisit it, revise it, and so on and so forth. And this comes back to some very simple models from management science, management theory, where typically, I think there's a pointer on here, summary of the management task, this issue of implementing, following a plan, monitoring the results, reviewing, and then going through. The website itself, all the things you do on the website, the services you offer will go or should go through this planning loop of planning, implementing, monitoring, and review. And the scope of what's reviewed really fits into these three categories: people, processes, and systems. So we can imagine that a portal environment, UPortal, is a system. The processes might be the news publishing aspect, or the authentication is a process that one goes through. And the people, well, the users. The things that we do fall into those categories. Very simple models to use. And customer focus, really, this best practice guide that I've been looking at provides some very useful ways of prioritizing amongst the massive things that come to us in a supplier-led institution, a supplier-led environment like we find ourselves in. I'm sure I'm speaking for most of the people in the room, when often it's not what the user's asking for on the web that comes to the top of the list. It's what a particularly vocal member of staff or a particularly strong, powerful department is requesting that usually dominates the work. But this graph is quite useful. We can plot satisfaction performance from a customer's point of view, unnecessary strengths, low priorities, against importance from the organization's point of view. So an example of something that's important, the graduate prospectus, satisfaction from the customer's point of view. If you plot these two things together, you can get low priorities, things you shouldn't be wasting your time on, because the customers don't mind, they're not bothered about them, and the institution's not going to benefit from it at the end of the day. So unnecessary strength, where the customers are happy, but the institution's not really benefiting. Priorities for improvement, where the customers say, well, it's all right, but it's not brilliant, but it's important to the institution. And finally, organizational strengths, where it's important to the institution, you're doing extremely well for the customer's point of view. It's your star offering on the website, and it might be your portal, it might be the way in which you manage news, so on and so forth. Just an overview of customer service then, just to sort of go through these dimensions that are provided. Tangibles, really physical characteristics, the things that we deliver, the publications, so on and so forth. Reliability, am I going to get the same service next time? Is it going to be the same way? Is it going to be online? Has it moved? Has the link broken? Responsiveness, are the people in your teams, the people who offer these services internally and offer services to customers and students, are they responsive? Do they listen to the customers? Do they care at the end of the day about what's happening within the institution? Assurance. We've used them before. They delivered. I think John went through this point earlier that he'd used his team to deliver a CMS. There's assurance there that there's a delivery coming at the end of the day. And empathy, understanding the needs of users. Well, many of us have been students. We understand the needs of students. Many of us have worked a long time in institutions and understand the needs of staff. Now, I want to go into the concept of customer change, which I found a very useful model for understanding how we get content out of the institution and make it available on the site, and resolve this issue I had at the outset, which was how do we get more research on the LSE website, which is presented to me by the pro-director. Okay, I don't know whether for some of you, this is a dirty word, this total quality management. The idea here is the internal customer, which I'm sure you're all familiar with. Supply chains from operational management. Dell are very good at putting computers into customers' hands in very short turnaround times because they're very good at managing inventory, very good at managing the supply chain. And Schomburger, for those of you who are interested in the academic side of it, is the person who came up with the concept of customer chains. And the whole point here is you're focusing upwards on the customer's needs rather than focusing downwards on the supplier's needs. The links between the points in the chain and the customer chain are people, organizational units. They're not processes or systems or what have you, physical people. And customer chains represent activities within an institution. I'm going to illustrate this in a minute, so if you just bear with me. And it's all about, at the end of the day, delivering value to the customer. And as we've identified earlier, that's about knowing who the customer is, and it's also about knowing what their needs are. And this is absolutely crucial. And I think one of the things that we found, not difficult to understand, but something we're starting to come around to, because almost always the experience has been about the supplier's point of view, about the institution's ideas about what makes a good website, rather than really having a detailed conversation with the customers themselves. And I was delighted to see John's videos there, talking to the customers, getting their feedback, and inputting that into the process, especially if you're doing agile development, which is ideal for getting those user stories. So this is a customer chain. This is a simple model, again, which I've taken from management text. External suppliers, they might be the people who provide you with the systems, content management system, or what have you. There are external customers, the reason the institution exists. These might be NGOs, they might be government offices, they might be students, they might be businesses, so on and so forth. And in between, you've got the organization, which is trying to deliver services or products to those people on the outside, and it's consuming services and products in order to do that. But inside, you've got this chain of people, chain of departments, who are working together, ideally, to make these services and products happen. And the simple model, you've got a customer who then becomes a supplier to another customer, who then becomes a supplier to another customer, who then, and so on and so forth. I labour the point, it's a simple model, but it's important for the next slides as we go forward. Now, just very briefly, the Academic Staff Publications Catalogue is a resource on the LSE website, which we set up about 2 years ago, 2 to 3 years ago. It was originally a printed publication, which was very nicely presented and done by the design unit. It was only in paper format, and it was typically distributed by hand to interested parties. Its purpose was to keep a record of all the publications produced by academic staff and quasi-academic staff within the institution, and to serve on a year-by-year basis as a record of this, publication output. Needless to say, it wasn't complete. It didn't have a particularly thorough record of the publication output of the LSE. Certainly, it was a relatively thin publication, and LSE, as you probably know, is a pretty prolific institution as far as research output is concerned. And so we wanted to turn this around. We knew that there was a need for it on the website. We knew people were interested in this content. And from my point of view, trying to respond to the pro-director's request about more research, this was a key way of getting research exposure onto the website in a relatively easy fashion. If we can get people to just tell us what publications they're producing, and we can get it accurate, then we can give a fairly good, although relatively retrospective, view of what's happening within the school. So we targeted this, and we went to the department, had a chat with them. It turned out that they were managing this information in a Word document, and it was kept on somebody's computer, and it would be updated once a year by sending an email out to the departments, and a letter, a newsletter, and some people would respond. Some people would say they'll do it later and not do it, and you ended up with these patchy responses coming back. I'm sure you're all familiar with this sort of experience, and you end up with a half picture of what's actually happening in the institution. Well, wanting to get content to the website, wanting to deliver a website that met the needs of users, we said, well, okay, what we're going to have to do is to turn this on its head and turn the publication into what we call a web-first publication. So we went back to the source, spoke to the person in the department who's responsible there, and said, we can make this database work for you. And we sold them EndNote. And this is because the library were using EndNote for managing bibliographic data. They had courses, and they were promoted within the school. And we encouraged them to constantly ask academic departments and academic staff to supply bibliographic data to the office, to put it into EndNote. And in return, we would take that EndNote database, convert it into XML, take the XML through XSLT and publish it to the website on a weekly basis. Or weekly is what it ended up as. So the value for our real customers who, on the website, are prospective students, media and professionals, the value is to get as many publications for as many academic staff into that resource so they can access that material. It's extremely useful for graduate students, especially those coming from the States or from abroad, who want to find out more about which people are studying, so which people are teaching within the institution, and possibly to influence which courses they choose. It's an example of how this information is used. So what we did was to change subtly and over time the way in which that department operated. And it was not easy. It was an incredibly difficult and painful process to go through. And I'll illustrate this a bit later. But ultimately, we ended up with a situation where the Academic Publications Office still owned the data. They put the data in the database. They send it to us once a week. We actually pick it up off a network drive. and then we publish it to the website as HTML, flat file HTML. We like to do flat file HTML. We like to keep it simple in the way we publish. And then people can access it on a regular basis by author. It's an example of a customer chain. Previously, we would be somewhere out off this picture because we'd have to take the Word document. We wouldn't actually be involved in the process. We didn't set up the database for them to operate on. Okay, here's another customer chain for the LSE website. This is probably familiar to most of you. I'm sure you've got similar models. Can you see this at the back? Is it clear? Okay. Two main publishers. There are the web editors, as we call them. These are people in departments who publish web pages. And I have to say there's another difference here between Warwick and probably other institutions. We're not really there to provide the means, the web publishing environment, so that people can then produce their own websites. Largely, we're trying to work together to create one website. We're also there to provide publishing technology to let people produce their own websites for departments and for various initiatives. But by and large, we're trying to argue and to debate this whole idea of a common website meeting common needs of common users. So we have ourselves centrally publishing things like the Academic Staff Publications Catalogue, the Graduate Prospectus, so on and so forth, news and on the go. And we have web editors who are working with us to publish some of that content, or working in departments to produce a website for a particular department and for nobody else. And they're not interested in what's happening centrally necessarily. Largely, it's collaborative. People are working together to provide a website that meets the user's needs. But here you can see that web services publish to web staging, which is a sort of draft server. It then gets mirrored to the LSE website where it's consumed by the target audiences. Web editors are doing the same. They publish their microsites here and they get replicated across. There are external suppliers who are providing us with software and also hardware and services. They support largely ITS. And ITS, in turn, are supplying the actual systems. My team doesn't do that anymore. We used to have the systems administrator in my team, but I gave him, in a sense, or we transferred him in the football sense, to the MIS department so that they could create a systems team and operate more effectively. And what we do, we supply them with requirements and changes, and they respond by developing the system. Now, here's one that's probably a lot more familiar to you, Graduate Prospectus. I know I've spoken to colleagues at Cambridge and to a number of other institutions about the way we work here. Again, it's a web-first publishing process. Where to start? It's difficult with this one, but it's a circular thing. I mean, you should really start here with the prospective students. But this is the traditional model, where you've got the design unit who are taking copy content that you, through Quark, going to the printers once they've laid out the prospectus, and the printers then delivering the final printed publications to the academic registrar's division, as we call it, and the registrar's division then distribute physically these publications to prospective students, either when they turn up on the day or open days or when they apply via the website or through post. Now, this was a huge problem for us because come the sort of summertime, we would receive this Quark file and we'd have a couple of days or a few weeks to throw together a website, Graduate Prospectus, to deliver to prospective students. In the old way of thinking, which was the prospectus, the printed version was the dominant publication. Of course, most people these days are using the web, and during that transitionary period, we were still trying to make the argument that the web was the first point of contact for many students, but that the printed version needed to be present. We managed through a trial and through various negotiations and really subordinating ourselves in some ways within the institution to argue that it would be possible to turn things on its head, to generate a web version, and then to publish a print version from that web version. And what we do is we take HTML, which we've created for the prospectus, we then convert that using XSLT again into Quark tags, Quark format, and we deliver a Quark file, one large Quark file, one large text box, to the design unit to then lay it out and still do their work. What they get is the pure content. They don't have to go through all the iterations and changes to the content. And they are then to publish it. And at the point at which they're ready to deliver the publications back to the Academic Registrar's Division, we're also ready, because we've already had it in place, to publish to the website. So we can simultaneously publish the prospectuses, web and print, to the website. And we were able to do that by developing a publishing process a chain of customers within the institution and to build partnerships between those various people so that they understood how it worked. Just a bit about this last bit here. Web services, somebody in the team who sends out a call to all the contributors, and they look at the old version of prospectus, which is in a hidden area, and they then update their versions using Word. They copy and paste from the website, put it into Word documents, track changes, and then send the Word documents via email to this person in web services, who then edits the HTML version from last year, and then when we're finished, we convert it to XHTML and publish it on the website, and it all gets converted to Quark. It's a relatively simple, hands-on process. There's not a huge amount of technology in there apart from XSLT, but it works. We've been doing 2-3 years now. Our graduate prospectus, our undergraduate prospectus, our calendar, major reports are all done through this process. Finally, just another model here, class registers. This is an online system based within our portal, LSE4U, which allows students, what we call tutees, and tutors to maintain registers of class attendance. At LSE, attendance at lectures is not compulsory, but attendance at classes is, and a class at LSE is a seminar. So you have to attend your classes, you have to contribute to the class, you have to do essays for the classes, so on and so forth. And the tutors will be monitoring this, and they'll be keeping a record of your attendance on the portal environment. Students can log in and check their attendance, and they can also check their marks and assessment in this environment. Previously, it was done with a piece of paper, a grid-shaped piece of paper, with stickies. And people would put stickies, or tutors would put stickies on this grid. At the end of the session, they'd hand the paper with all these stickies on to the academic registrar's division, and they'd have a real difficult time collating all this information into one place. So MIS, as it was, which I, until recently, worked with them, but we've moved to a new division recently, developed the application which allowed these two people to manage that information and to do it in such a way that the data would be stored within the student record, within the SITS. Student Services Centre are really the service provider here. They're the people who maintain the student records and have a valid interest in assuring that this is accurate. And one of the problems we had quite early on was that the tutees and the tutors would be asking for changes or complaining or raising issues about the data, which had come to the poor blokes on the MIS team, who were really Java programmers. So they would be receiving all sorts of queries about, I can't select course 104, or I've got a problem because a tutor said something about me and I want to complain about it. And we were getting all these queries in the Java team. So what's happened is we've set up a system which then passes those queries back to the actual supplier of the service. So the customer is the tutor and the tutees. This is the next supplier, and this supplier is basically supplying them, who are then supplying these customers. So the chain goes this way, rather than this way. Okay, just a few points here. I'm very wary, having looked at quite a lot of management theory, about applying it to academic institutions, because we all know the context is relatively loose, and the whole issue of customer chains and applying these sort of models in academic contexts can be quite difficult. Also, the links between suppliers at a micro level, between individuals, can be quite complex, and certainly the link between what's going on within departments and processes and the actual strategy of the institution is vague at best. Internal customers and internal suppliers, who's a supplier, who's a customer, these difficult issues to wrestle with. Formal agreements, SLAs, does anyone know what an SLA is? Oh, great, okay. Service level definitions. Okay, so my point down here is that although this is changing, doesn't fit with HE, but it is changing. And certainly we're starting to see that within the culture. People are starting to appreciate these a lot more. But we can't be too rigid. Ultimately, we work together in the institution and we try to make things work wherever we can. So the key issue about customer change is not to get too prescriptive about it, to say you must do it this way or you must follow this process. It's really to say that there is a target customer at the end of the process. And the whole point here is about adding value for that target customer. And the customer chain provides a framework to understand how to provide value to that target customer. The relationships between the suppliers and the customers are weak points. These are the difficult areas to deal with. And internal customers can very easily lose sight of the final picture, the needs of the final customer. So you end up in a situation, sometimes you don't get quite the level of cooperation you need, especially when there's been a significant change. Let's say we've had disasters recently, international disasters, which affect students, and therefore we have to respond reasonably quickly internally. And sometimes somebody in the loop might not be aware of the implications of one of these external events and doesn't respond as quickly as you'd like. Often, they don't have sight of the final customer. They only have sight of their immediate internal customers. And for this reason and similar reasons, change can be inhibited. Very quickly, just nip out here and go to another model. When I came into HE, it was about 97, I think one of my first days was actually going to Brian's IWMW. As part of my induction, they took me across and said, this is an event. I was really interested in systems, having come from a commercial background. Systems were my main interest, and setting up web systems, it was 97 and going back 94, getting the technology to work was a real challenge. And people were largely just grateful for having things online and to be able to use them. And the audience base was relatively savvy technically. And so systems were where it was at. But as I've gone on in my career, the processes have become the real key issues. And I've illustrated that, I think, with the Academic Staff Publications Catalogue. Okay, you might have the system, the EndNote database, you might understand XML inside out, you might understand XSLT, but ultimately it means nothing if you can't get the content and if you can't organize the industry, organize the business to pull that content out and put it on the web. So I became much more interested in processes, and we've shown some of the processes there. And finally, people. People are the key issue. And just to emphasize this, people really are the key issue if you're working within academic institutions. So what we try and do in web services is to build and develop partnerships, relationships within the institution. And we've put a lot of time and effort into this, working on communication, working on talking to people, visiting them, identifying what their problems are, from a supplier point of view. Relationships between the customer supplier really do need to be collaborative. We need to be thinking win-win. If you've got that sort of colleague, or you go into a party institution where someone's, I don't know, you just get the feeling that they're quite negative about something, or they don't want to help you, or they want to block you, which I'm sure we've all had experience of, then sometimes it's better just not to bother, to go away and work somewhere else where there is a win-win relationship and people are genuinely committed to improving services for customers. Then using that as a case study and going back to that department a bit later, either with a mandate or simply through, I don't know, internal connections, and seeing whether you can pick up where you left off. There's no point banging your head against a brick wall, it's been our experience. Customers and suppliers, really you need to work as partners, not as customer suppliers. I've used the model, as I said, don't be prescriptive about it. Our experience has been about setting up transient teams, groups of people who are working together towards common goals within the institution. And I'm sure for a lot of you this isn't new, this is just a reiteration of some of your experiences. But key here is a focus on the outcome and having some contact with the target customers. We recently had a new web editor who's been with us about a year, and she dragged us down to an open day and got me and the other team members out with clipboards, speaking to prospective students. And it was embarrassing at times because we had to go up and speak to these students and say, have you got a moment? And they just look at us and go, no, and walk away. Or they would say, yeah, sure, yeah, I'm really interested. And so we get these varying responses. It's quite humbling to really speak with the actual customer before they bought the service. You know, they weren't committed yet. And what we said and our appearance, the way we presented ourselves, had a real impact upon whether they may or may not come to the institution. And also there's this issue of fit with the organisational culture. It's a mistake to think that all HE institutions have the same culture. Certainly they differ between different institutions, and certainly there are different cultures within the institutions. So you might have cultures which are more task-orientated, enterprises, corporations really do focus on getting the job done. And you've got others who are a bit more interested in the committee side of things and the bureaucracy and ensuring that the processes are followed as they should be. And, you know, the management styles vary, the styles vary, and the level of formality varies. I have to say, at LSE, a lot of business is done through conversation rather than through documents. So it is helpful to work in this partnership model within the LSE environment. I've worked in other academic institutions, for one name, where I think it would be a lot more difficult to set up these partnerships. But I think it really comes down to your personal style and also the approach you take. The outcome really has to have value for the customer, and it's this value for the customer which provides you as a person maybe trying to set up partnerships in your institution with the mandate to do so. I've gone along the approach here of having a rough idea of what's wanted from the website, from the senior management, e.g. more research, go and sort it out. That gives me all the mandate I need from a management point of view. Going up and giving detailed presentations about how we're going to do it just isn't going to cut it. They're not going to be interested, they don't have time, they're dealing with interviews with the major press, so on and so forth. So we talk to the customer, and we want to find out what their needs are, and they give us the mandate to work effectively within the institution. This can be highly effective, but it's incredibly costly in terms of time and effort. I think I'm going greyer. I certainly feel that my voice is getting more dull as I'm getting older because I've had so many conversations, so many strained conversations in the institution to get things working. You really have to put a lot of heart and soul into this to make it work. And also you need the right people with the right skills. You need people to some extent who can subordinate themselves, they can take a bit of flack, they can be abused in terms of one's perceptions of yourself. You can take a lot of criticism internally for doing some of these things. And certainly I've had as many successes as failures within the institution. But the way in which we look at this is often the failures can be picked up at a later date and reworked. It's complex, it's volatile, and delivery is really dependent upon the relationships with people. You don't have that really strong command and control input that allows you to say, look, I'm sorry, we're not getting anywhere with this. It's got to be done this way. You do get it with the prospectus. You might get it with your experts directory. Other areas are a little more difficult if it's not within the particular area of interest of the senior management at the time. So personal relationships, very important. Whose web is it anyway? I'm just about to round up pretty soon. But, well, I'd say it's the customers. At LSE, we're talking about two services at the moment. We're talking about the LSE website, and we're talking about LSE for You. LSE for You is our portal. LSE website is externally facing. The LSE website is there for prospective students. It's there for professionals, and these are people in NGOs, other academic institutions who are interested in, I don't know, either purchasing the products and services LSE has to offer or in contributing to LSE in a professional sense. And finally, there are the media, because as you're probably aware, LSE is often in the media, and this is very important for LSE's reputation and also for its ongoing recruitment of quality graduates and then turning them out as alumni. The target customer is really the key. They own the website, and I think this is particularly important. We're now spending a lot more time, certainly with our new web editor, going out and speaking to the customers and working with them to get a clear idea of what the website should be delivering, by identifying their needs. And a relatively, I don't know whether this is controversial, but I'm going to present it. I've only got one more slide after this, but position of web teams in the customer chain. I've gone through the customer chains with you. I've given you some examples of how customer chains apply in real life. I'd argue that the position of the customer chain is crucial. Being within the chain means that you end up with supplier-focused websites. The user doesn't care whether it's the Department of X website or such and such website. It's just the university website to a large extent. They visit, they browse the pages, and they've got needs they want to satisfy. And if you're inside the chain as a supplier, you're going to end up with lots of little microsites, possibly serving the needs of audiences, possibly replicating each other's activities. Whereas if you've put yourself at the end of the chain, you're in a better position to realize customer-focused web services. You're leading the provision. You're talking to the customer, you're identifying what they need, and using that prioritization matrix I mentioned earlier, you're able to say what should we provide and what shouldn't, and argue it through. As I say, the customer gives you the mandate. Priority is to increase value for target customers. You have to identify them and identify the needs before you can do that. And increasing value is achieved through partnerships in the customer chain. Who leads a partnership? Where should web teams position themselves? I think this is an issue for debate. Certainly I've got ideas and we're trying things internally. And at the moment we're actually restructuring the department. My team, the team I lead, has moved from what was MIS, Business Systems and Services, and we now find ourselves in the Press and Communications Division, which I think is a really positive development and something that came out of a couple of people leaving LSE recently. So a web services at LSE, I'm not saying we've got it right, but this is what we're doing. Meet the information needs of customers in pursuit of the school's objectives. I've been using this for years. I hope you don't interpret that as one of those awful marketing management speak type things that we referred to earlier. You could do, but it's a very simple, it's the most succinct way I can express what we're trying to do at LSE. We know people have got needs, they want things, and we're trying to deliver it to them. but we're not just doing anything. You know, we're not there to just meet their needs. We're doing it because the school benefits from it. And so it's a succinct way I can put it. Primary questions, what are the school's objectives then? This actually can be quite difficult because academic institutions have many objectives in many parts of the institution, and getting a clear idea of what the institution's really about can be quite difficult. You can certainly say research and teaching and start from that point of view. And who are the target customers? Well, we've gone through the customers for the LSE website. Other people would argue, and I was having lunch with Ben earlier, and we were talking about who the customers are. They're also students, they're actually here, there are staff, and of course the alumni. Well, we try to serve them through LSE for You. That's our target, is to start to offer that service for them and the LSE website only for external customers. And identifying the target's needs obviously is something that's going to be an ongoing process. Secondary questions, what services should we be providing and to what levels? Sometimes you don't really have the power to make that decision, even though you should be controlling and you're accountable for this area. That's a difficult issue. How are we going to monitor performance and satisfaction? Again, very difficult problem. When institutions don't have very clear models for how quality should be measured, these are intangible issues which need constant measurement. And if I'm saying students are getting a good service, it needs to correlate with what another department is saying. We need to be using the same metrics. And getting that established in the university environment is very difficult. Missing questions, what customer chains are required and who's going to lead them? Well, what we've tried to do is lead them, but we haven't done it with a banner and a flag. We've done it by going into departments quite humbly and buying coffees and talking to people and getting them interested in what we're doing. Just some references to finish off. Successful Delivery Toolkit. These slides are in your pack, so if you want to visit this, I really encourage you, if you're interested in best practice and you want to refer to something outside of your immediate environment for help, then this Successful Development Toolkit is very good. The particular resources I refer to are Customer Focus and Joined at Working. When you read these, they really will resonate with your experiences, I hope, in HE context. And generally, the OGC website is excellent. Affecting Change in HE at Luton University, it's part of the GIST best practice guides. This is superb. It's probably one of the undiscovered jewels in what's offered by GIST. If you go in and have a look at it, amazing wealth of information, and all tailored for HE. All for HE, particularly UK HE. Lots of very simple models and ideas. And I think it all comes down to toolkits at the end of the day, doesn't it? Just tools you can use. If you're interested in management, Chartered Management Institute, and if you're interested in the theoretical academic side of things, then Porter, Competitive Advantage, Schomburger, Building a Chain of Customers. Although I think you'll find it quite difficult to get that book. Okay.
Thanks.
To be done.
Isn't it great to have a talk that's not full of angle graphics and to have a different perspective on our business? So we have time for a few questions. Can you please give your name and institution when you get the mic?
I recognise this.
Surely you're having a long week to do all this from
here. Apologies, I missed the beginning of your... Sorry, all right, okay. I missed the beginning of your talk, so you may want to answer this. I was looking at your little flow where you were producing the prospectus.
Yeah.
And I have to say that there's some quite good resonances in there because in our department we get the Quark file and we have a slight bit more sophistication, I think, than you in that they convert the Quark file into a text file before we get it, so we have to guess the formatting. What I was interested in, I mean, we've been sort of banging on for years that it would be really sensible get these documents that were knocked up into the more portable form. Yeah. And doing that in HTML, XHTML and stuff like that. You know, spot on, that's the way to do it. What I'm interested in is how you manage to get yourself into the chain. In our case, it's very much design department led. That's seen as the paper documents is the thing.
Yeah.
How did you manage that?
Well, we were quite fortunate, actually, and I'm hoping that it's not an exception and that you can use this, but our experience was the same. We had real difficulty with the particular personnel that were running that department at that time. The leadership changed in that area, and a new person came in who was open to ideas and could see what we were saying. They understood the benefits, and we were then able to trial it and test it. And once they were happy that it was going forward, they went with it. And it's because they were interested in a win-win solution as well. If they're not interested in a win-win solution, you need a mandate from senior management. And if you don't have that, then again, it's a brick wall, wasting your time. You have to work with these people. They're part of the chain. You can't do it without them. So if they're not willing to do it, I don't think there's any point in trying it. What I would say is that we also try to appeal to their needs. They are designers. They are fantastic designers. And they see really good work. I'm sure you've got similar quality at Birmingham. What we try to do is to say, well, we'll deal with all the content stuff. So we give you a package of content which is almost complete. Everything you need is there. And your job from that point will be doing the layout, we'll be doing the positioning, typography, so on and so forth. And what we'll give you will take away some of the pain and put you in a position where you can still do your work and give you a bit more time. And it didn't offer them huge benefits, but certainly it didn't take them back, and it offered them a little bit of a benefit, and they could see that.
So effect accusers.
Sorry?
Effect accusers, not bad
actually. I'm not, yeah.
I should just like to say to the people on the internet that that was a joke and not an incitement to violence. Okay. Once again, thanks to Stephen. Just a couple of domestic announcements before we move on. There may be access, network access in people's bedrooms. We need to check this, but we're hopeful that this will be made available if you've got a cable and plug it in. But if it doesn't work, get to Ben or our reception and we'll try and track things down for you. The next session are the regional discussion groups. So each discussion group has its... What's that? It has the same topic, which is content management systems. In your folder, it has the room, the location of the room. So the southeast is here. For most of the groups, there isn't a nominated facility. What's that sound? So you'll need to manage that for yourselves, except for the southeast. I think Miles is driving that, and that's here, and there are a lot of people, so you'll need to think about how you manage that. A reminder that the issues that you talk about, we'll try and come up with a topic for the panel to address on the final day. And then at the coffee, you'll be going to the parallel session rooms, and I believe that the location of your parallel sessions that you've chosen should also be in your pack. If you're a workshop facilitator, you'll probably need to go and check your rooms sort of slightly in advance. The meal tonight will be at 7 o'clock prompt, which is over in the Barnes Wallace building, which is not too far from here. So be over there at 7 o'clock prompt. There are maps and it's not too far. And if anyone wants to go to a pub beforehand, the Lasser Gowrie is recommended and slightly in the other direction. Okay, thank you.